better.
Now, back to the Zone. All of times have come. Here, but now they're gone.
Seasons don't feel the reaper, nor do the wind, the sun, or the rain.
All right, welcome back. Justin Akery, Pat Bradley, Matty T, Wally Hall joining us today, courtesy of our friends at Deltic Timber, as he does every Wednesday, or at least most Wednesdays when he's not here on another day. Or whatever. You know what I meant. Let's go to the Stickies Rock and Roll Chicken Shack hotline from NBC Sports and the NFL Network. Hot Springs native, Randy Moss, joining us in the Zone. Randy, welcome back. How are you?
Hey, good. Wally who? Wally, who's that other guy?
Come on, man.
C. Wallace. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm relaxing in my hotel in Newark, New Jersey. I'm doing the New York Jets for the NFL draft coming up tomorrow.
Scenic and beautiful Newark, New Jersey?
New Jersey is actually a beautiful state. A lot of people don't realize that. That's why they called it the Garden State. A lot of parts of New Jersey are spectacular. Newark? It's probably not one of those.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, we'll talk some NFL, certainly. We wanted to start probably with a little horse racing and enjoy the broadcast this week, and I thought it was especially entertaining. And we thought it was a wide-open field other than California Chrome, which appeared to be the standout horse. And once they actually ran him, that appeared to be the case. The clear-cut best horse stood out on Saturday.
Yeah, it was all about the kind of trip he was going to get. He's a horse that doesn't like to have dirt in his face, but the thing about it is, when you're as good a horse as California Chrome, you can kind of make your own luck, you know? I mean, you've got enough acceleration when you need it to get out of the way of the dirt and get to where you need to be. And yeah, he's a really, really good horse and just an amazing story. That's really, you know, one of the parts about California Chrome that's resonated the loudest with people around the country. It's that he's a blue-collar, you know, every man sort of kind of horse that shows that horse racing can really be a democracy when you've got, even when you've got all these people trying to spend millions and millions and millions of dollars to get a Derby winner.
Yeah, it's sort of like politics, if the guy that didn't have any money could win, but that doesn't really happen much anymore. So he will move on now to the Preakness. Who do you see as the biggest threat there? And Pat and I have talked the last couple of days sort of, you know, about horses that didn't run in Kentucky that will be there. Bayern's one that comes to mind. What are your thoughts on the biggest threat to California Chrome and the Preakness?
Well, a couple of the horses that ran behind him kind of had compromised trips. Danza got broadsided after the start. Ride on Curlin got stopped around the turn when he was making a nice move. And I could see both those horses running better in the Preakness, but California Chrome was so dominant the way he ran away from them that I think you're right. You need to look first and foremost at horses that didn't run in the Derby. And there's a horse called Social Inclusion, who was really a superstar in Florida this winter. He only ran twice there, but he won very impressively in both of those races. And then they took him to the Wood Memorial, and it was probably a little case of too much too soon, but he still had to lead at the eighth pole. So, I mean, he's a very talented horse. He's going to be well-rested. He's probably going to set the pace. And I think he right now, to me, looks like the primary challenger to California Chrome.
Have you heard any updates on the foot situation with Opportunity that kept him out of the Kentucky Derby?
It was a foot bruise, but he also, when they were checking out the foot bruise, they also found a couple of little spurs, that you know, bone spurs. So they went in and just had a little minor surgical operation while he was on the shelf. So he's definitely out of the Triple Crown, but he is expected to come back, let's say, like maybe for Saratoga or something later in the summer.
Randy, that was, I think the speed figure was 97 for California Chrome. You do speed figures. Is there any way to figure out what it would have been if Espinoza hadn't let off the gas?
Well, I do buyer speed figures for certain parts of the country, including Arkansas. And I can tell you there was quite a bit of debate, quite a bit of discussion about what really would have, you know, what was an accurate speed figure for the Kentucky Derby. And really, the jury's still out on that. It's 97 officially for now, but there's every possibility that it could be raised, you know, even before the Preakness. You know, we're finding out all sorts of things. We knew there was a strong headwind, yeah, which compromised the time to a certain extent. But now we've come to find out that the racetrack wasn't watered for like about an hour for the Kentucky Derby. And when you go back and watch the replays, it was very dusty. You mm-hmm. see a lot of dirt flying around that you don't ordinarily see in the Kentucky Derby, and that probably slowed down the track as well. So I'm viewing the Kentucky Derby for California Chrome as being pretty much the same kind of race that he ran at Santa Anita in the Santa Anita Derby and the time before that in the San Felipe. I know a lot of people do, I don't buy the whole California Chrome was coasting to the wire angle. You know, one of the things that makes California Chrome such a good horse and horses like him is that they're so competitive and they're always going to put out. And, you know, he was under a drive from the top of the stretch to the 16th pole. And just because Espinosa, you know, stood up in the irons a little bit and looked behind him, it might have made a neck or, you know, a quarter length difference, but to me, that'd be about it.
Randy Moss joining us on the Stiggy's Rock and Roll Chicken Shack Hotline. We're going to talk some NFL draft in a second as well. I have another question about the Kentucky Derby. I had gone with Ride on Curlin, the horse that came second in the Arkansas Derby. Calvin Burrell, for whatever reason, decided that instead of trying to kind of ease his way over, he would dive to the inside of the track before heading down the track, and that is costing him the ride moving forward. Were you surprised by his decision with him being a Hall of Famer? And certainly that was talked about beforehand with the trainer, clearly, that that's not what they wanted to happen, but he did it anyway.
Well, one of the things that they wanted with Ride on Curlin was to get him off the pace, which is why he was as far back as he was in the Arkansas Derby, which hurt him that day because the pace was so slow. Calvin did the same thing with Minette Bird. He does the same thing with a lot of horses you see at the back of the pack. He just angles sharply over to the rail. That doesn't really, you know, cost the horse any ground to speak of. So, you know, it wasn't that really that I had an issue with. And the horse was moving up very nicely on the inside, and things had worked really well for Calvin and Ride on Curlin until about the halfway point on the turn. Calvin was about three paths off the rail. Ride on Curlin was moving pretty nicely. He might have been second. He dove to the inside when he hit some traffic at exactly the same time a horse named Vickers on Trouble, in Trouble, was stopping to a walk down on the rail.
Mm.
So when Calvin took a quick left to get to the rail, which is sort of his trademark, and that horse was stopping right in front of him, he had to really put on the brakes and pull up and come around right on Vickers in Trouble as soon as he found an opening. And even got into a little bit more traffic trouble at about the 3/16 pole. So you can make the case that he should have been third. But, you know, other than that, I think it would be a little ambitious.
I wish he would have been, because then my kids could have gone to college, but it turns out that's over. Let's move on. Maybe they can end up in the NFL draft someday, and then everything will be just fine. It'll be okay. Let's shift our attention over there, as you'll be part of the coverage on NFL Network. I think generally there's a consensus that Jadeveon Clowney's going to be the guy. There are some people that think they're going to go Khalil Mack, trade the spot. What do you think is the most likely at this point?
The most likely scenario is Jadeveon Clowney, you know, pairing with J.J. Watt and have an amazing defensive line. You know, there are some concerns, obviously, about Clowney's season last year. You know, was his declining production just a matter of, you know, offenses double teaming him and paying a lot more attention to him in the SEC, or was he just kind of taking too many plays off? I mean, that's something that personnel directors and coaches around the NFL have been looking at this entire draft process, the ones with high picks. And, you know, from what I hear, and, you know, you kind of take it with a grain of salt because I haven't been that involved with the draft process, but I think Clowney is very likely the number one overall pick.
I think that's probably true. Johnny Manziel's been the one we've talked about a lot, and I guess first-round quarterbacks in general. Is there a consensus at the folks at the NFL Network as to where he will go and how high he might end up?
No, and they're debating it on TV, like, as we speak. I mean, it's the single most debated topic this entire draft, you know, what to make of Johnny Manziel. I mean, it's clear the guy has a special talent. It's clear the guy has a heck of an arm. And, you know, he's going to be a success in the NFL to a certain degree. I think the bottom line that everyone's trying to figure out in the NFL is what happens with Johnny Manziel after that rookie season, after that year two, when he's probably been banged up a little bit, you know, a la Robert Griffin, a la Michael Vick, and he's not even as big as Michael Vick. And he has to transition from being a guy who pulls the ball down and runs with it to a guy that sits in the pocket and passes. Is he going to be effective when option one is covering, checking down, staying in the pocket to option two, option three, and going through all his progressions? Or he's just going to pull the ball down and run with it, you know? Is he going to be Drew Brees that, despite his height, can succeed as a pocket passer in the NFL? Or is he going to be one of these guys that that just gets a little too antsy in the pocket and never makes that transition? That's what they're trying to figure out. But I have a feeling that he's still going to go pretty high in the first round.
Rindy, speaking of quarterbacks, do you get a sense of what's your feel and take on who's going to get taken first amongst the quarterbacks?
No, I really don't. I know Teddy Bridgewater's stock, if you talk to all the draft gurus, has fallen significantly since the beginning of this whole draft process. I think at one point he was anointed by a lot of people to be the can't-miss, you know, top quarterback pick. I mean, Blake Bortles is in there as well. I still think Manziel is going to be the very first quarterback taken off the board, personally.
Hmm. Randy Moss joining us on the Stiggy's Rock and Roll Chicken Shack Hotline, talking some NFL draft. There was some news that came out, I guess, in the last day or two. Maybe you heard about it before then, but that they may consider moving it out of New York on a regular basis. Certainly a lot of cities would love to have the opportunity to showcase and hold the draft, host the draft. What's your thought on that personally?
Well, I think they can make it like the Super Bowl and sort of rotate it around, because the draft has gotten to be such an event that it wouldn't surprise me at all if the NFL did something like that. And it would probably, you know, in my opinion, be the best thing for the NFL if they did. I mean, if the NFL is a year-round business now, you know, I mean, they've done such an amazing job of creating interest in the NFL every month of the year. You know, I mean, between the scouting combines and the free agent frenzy and the draft and the training camps and the preseason and the regular season, it never ends. And the NFL fans love that part of it.
Well, it's going to be interesting. I think we're all sort of curious. And unfortunately, this year, Arkansas fans do not have as many guys involved in it. Looks like Chris Smith will probably be the most likely pick, and I guess he's projected as maybe a third or fourth round choice at this point, but maybe Travis Swanson sneaks in before it's over, but not a whole lot of interest outside of maybe following guys that are from the SEC and headed to the league. So we will see. So you're focused on the Jets, and what's the other team you're kind of keeping an eye on?
The Jets, that's my entire focus.
Okay.
I'm doing the Jets tomorrow for NFL Network, and then I get on a plane Friday morning and go to Jacksonville for the Golf Channel to do their spotlight coverage for the Players Championship.
Jeez, what a deal.
Meanwhile, I mean, I live in Minneapolis, so I don't I'm in a college football wasteland up there with the Big Ten. What's the temperature in Arkansas with Brett Bielema, if you don't mind me asking you a question?
We like him, I think, and I think people believe that his style is winning football, but there is still significant concern that he can get the number of athletes that he needs to run his program the way, you know, that, and run, you know, run his offense and defense, I guess, the way that he wants to. So I think
that's what concerns me. That's what concerns me, is that he won in Wisconsin by basically having the best athletes in the Big Ten on the offensive line. Now, good luck doing that in the SEC when you got to compete against the Alabamas and the LSUs and teams like that. That's the only thing that worries me.
Yeah, my question, you know, and I don't know how much we're going to see. He did get a kid, I think, out of Minnesota, speaking of Minnesota, to play offensive line for him. He does still have those connections there. And if I'm going into Wisconsin or Minnesota or some of those Midwestern states, I would think you could sell it as, hey, come play in the best league in the country. You're a big, bad offensive lineman. Go prove it against the best. So I do think there's some draw there. That's something we haven't really talked about, because normally you see guys get them from the region, but I think maybe he can go a little outside the traditional SEC areas and get some of those guys.
Randy, I think there's a little concern that the SEC is such a conventional football league that you've got to be a little unconventional to compete.
Well, especially, you know, when you're at Arkansas and you don't have the luxury of the recruiting base maybe that some of these other guys do. I mean, look at Bobby Petrino, you know. I mean, he was able to have that sort of unconventional style in the SEC, and he was fabulously successful, and it makes you wonder if that's what Arkansas needs. That's my biggest concern.
Well, you know how we do down here. It's we need something similar to that. We got to do something out of the ordinary. We cannot do a traditional football thing. And then as soon as Bielema is hired, well, you know what? We can definitely win with traditional football. It's absolutely going to work. I know Coach can get it done here. So we're eternally optimistic. I think people realize they'll probably take their lumps again this year, but they'll be improved. The record may not be a lot better, but going forward, hopefully it all works out. He's I think he fits in well. You know, he's kind of a blue collar fella. So hopefully he'll make it here for a while.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, there you go. Randy, thank you so much for the time. Appreciate it.
Take care.
All right, Randy Moss from the NFL Network and NBC Sports. Good stuff.
Well, imagine that. You go from...